This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
I am so stoked to have you on. You, I just have to tell you. So, I play saxophone for the DJ D-Rock, and we went on tour last year, and every single set we played Culebra. With,
oh well, really?
Yeah, man. Every single set we played that song. So, when Ben linked us up, and then I was doing some research, and I found out it was your song. I was like, no way! How cool is that?
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for playing Calabria at all of your sets. I really appreciate it. It's crazy that you found about me with Calabria.
yeah, man. Because we played it so many times across the U.S., dude. So as soon as I found out that you were one of the producers behind that tune, I was pretty stoked. And so, Donovan, how's everything going with you, man?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Life in Mexico is all right. Can't complain.
Yeah, good, man. And Donovan, for people that might not be familiar with you or your projects, can you just give us a rundown of who you are and what you do?
Okay, that might take some time. well, I am one half of a music project called Fallen Roses. Then I have a lot of like different monikers or like aliases, like different projects. I have another one called Donovan's Playground, which is a lo-fi hip-hop project, which is like my solo or like personal project. Then I have like an EDM / electronic / funk project called DNBN, like simply Donovan. I have another project called Shy Guy, which is with another friend I have called Spoon Beats. I'm an A&R, and I also own a couple of labels, so yeah, hey, I do quite a lot. Oh my!
Well, geez, we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Man, okay, so let's start from the beginning of what got you interested in music and how did your music journey start? And then, of course, we'll dive into all of these different projects.
Well, I think I started to make music when I was around 14, 13. I don't remember. I was in high school. No, I was in elementary school. I don't remember. I'm not sure, to be honest. But I started to listen to a lot of like EDM in that, like mainly like Skrillex and like David Guetta, that mainly like dubstep and progressive house. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, how do DJs actually make music? Because I see like they doing like a lot of stuff when they perform, but I don't really understand the process of making music, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, is there like a different sound in one of those knobs? Like they have to remember what note they're playing. Like interesting instrument.
Yeah. Did you see the meme that's been going around in the electronic music community with the girl that's crying and she's like, what do DJs actually do?
Yeah. I was that girl when I know how it feels. Like
that's perfect.
But yeah, that's how I started making music. Like I was just like going through like, okay, what do DJs actually do? I pretty much Googled that same question. And I found out that like, okay, DJs only like mix music, but most famous DJs are like both DJs and producers. And I was like, oh, okay, what do producers do then? Mm-hmm. And I started to just like watch tutorials on YouTube. And initially I wanted to make dubstep, like Skrillex.
Yep.
But to be honest, like I never really enjoyed like sound design. Mm. And because like dubstep and all of these like bass subgenres are very like it's very important to have a good sound design. I didn't really enjoy it. Like I remember watching a lot of tutorials of like Massive mm-hmm. and that kind of BSTs and plugins, but I never really got into it. And that almost made me quit wow. making music wow. because I was like so frustrated. Like, why does my growls or my bass lines don't sound like Skrillex, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Well, Donovan, I love that you say that, man, because Skrillex is the reason that I got into music production as well. And I similarly started with Massive and I never really got the hang of Massive, but as soon as Serum came out and I started learning Serum, that was a game changer for dubstep and bass music production, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Also, the interface of Serum is like really friendly in mm-hmm. comparison of Massive.
Yeah. Yeah, super
it's
friendly.
So much more like graphic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but by the time Serum launched, I was already like dubstep was no longer a thing.
Yeah. So tell me how you continued to progress. So what happened when you decided you didn't want to produce dubstep anymore?
Well, first off, I started to discover new music. I was like, okay, I like Skrillex, but I want to listen like similar music. So I started to type like dubstep on YouTube, and I found channels like Dubstep Gutter or like Monster Cat, especially mm-hmm. Monster
oh
Cat.
Oh my God, Monster Cat's awesome.
So yeah, I remember like discovering through all of these like new producers. And Monster Cat was releasing like a lot of different genres. And one of these genres was, I think they were calling it, I don't remember how exactly they labeled that genre, but it was the one that producers like Mr. Fiji Guiji and mm-hmm. Direct were releasing back then, mm-hmm. which was like the chill / like minimal division of Monster Cat. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this is electronic music as well? And I was like, oh, I didn't know that you could make like chill electronic music because mm-hmm. when I heard the word electronic music or EDM, I was just thinking on like Tomorrowland or bass music, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just like very different. And for me, it was like, oh, this is like very emotional. And I didn't know that music producers could make like chill music, you know?
Yeah. Wow. And so once you discovered that there's a whole new world of chill music for producers, where did that take you?
Well, first, I think that I started to search similar music on SoundCloud. So I started to listen to a lot of producers. And I think when I started to make lo-fi, I didn't know I was making lo-fi. Mm. I just remember I was listening to a lot of these different channels because the way I was discovering music back then, it was mainly through these channels, like Majestic Casual or like Mr. Suicide Sheep or Chill Nation, Trap Nation, like all of these channels that were huge back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I was also following them on SoundCloud, and I was currently like going through the music they liked or the music that they were reposting on SoundCloud. So I was just like playing around with different genres, like, okay, what am I good at? Because I didn't know what I wanted to do back then. I was just like, okay, let's try Future House because I like Future House. I also like dubstep. Let's try again. I like this new genre that's like chill step. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I was calling it mm-hmm. back then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, how I started making music. I was just submitting demos to like all of these different channels. And eventually one of these tracks was accepted by Majestic Casual and they were like, we want to release this on our label.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, really?
Wow.
So yeah, I think that's how it started. That's how Fallen Roses started at least.
Incredible. So when did you meet the other half of Fallen Roses? And like, when did you guys decide to become a partnership?
Okay, so this is quite strange because the way that Fallen Roses started is initially Fallen Roses was a project between me and a friend called Coque. He's from Chile. We started the project together, like we conceived the project together, but we never released any single track. Mm-hmm. And we did the first track was a collaboration with B-Dom. It was Fallen Roses and B-Dom, Yours and Nobody Else's. But then the second track was also with B-Dom. Then then my initial partner of Fallen Roses basically abandoned the project.
Mm-hmm.
Like we parted ways because he wanted to go in like a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like some solo releases as Fallen Roses. But then I was collaborating a lot with B-Dom. So I was like, perhaps you should just join me on Fallen Roses. And that's what we did. Like after that, we started to work together closer. But yeah, initially we met through Coque. Like they are both from Chile.
Oh wow!
So they were friends in real life.
Wow!
So that's how we met actually. And Coque, I met him on SoundCloud. So yeah,
awesome.
SoundCloud and mutual friends, I would say.
And what year was this?
Around 2016 or 2017. Yeah, around 2016 or 17.
Wow. And so what, kind of talk us through the growth of Fallen Roses, because I mean, your project is massive at this point. So like, how did you start from being a brand new project to becoming the project you are today?
Well, I think there were a lot of different stages for a project. Like it all started with Majestic Casual because, when I was making beats, I started to gain some traction on my music on my first project. It was called Wistful. And I was getting like a couple of thousands on plays on YouTube or SoundCloud. But you don't really get paid, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, of course, you can have millions and millions of sprints and you're going to make like $12.
Yeah.
And I was also like 16 or 17 mm-hmm. by that time. So money wasn't like really, like I didn't know that you could make a living off streams, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was just like additional income.
Yeah.
So for me, when I signed to Majestic Casual, we did this track called Yours and Nobody Else's. And it started to do like super well on Spotify. But I didn't know. I was just looking at the numbers on SoundCloud and I was like, oh, this artist I like reposted the song or
yeah.
dropped a comment on my beat, you know? And I remember their label manager reached out to me and was like, here's your royalty statement. You should send us an invoice to get paid. I was like, wait, get paid for what?
Awesome.
And then I realized like, oh, interesting. And for me, Majestic Casual was like a dream, you know, because to be honest, like even though Majestic Casual might not have as many views as it had back then or be as relevant as it was back then, I think that it's still one of the most solid curators out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it really shaped the way on how I conceive electronic music, because unlike I'm not trying to make like unfair comparisions between channels, but Majestic Casual was differently pushing different music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they were kind of thinking like outside the box, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these other channels were just like hoping on the trends, on whatever it was trending, they were posting.
Mm-hmm.
But Majestic Casual was like, okay, yeah, that's cool, but check this new genre from this like random producer. Like, you could see artists, one day, like big artists like Kai Tranada on the channel, and the day after, like new producers like doing like weird genres from like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And at least for me, I think that that definitely shaped the way on how I conceive music. And it was the only way on how I knew to promote music back then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I only knew that these YouTube channels were getting hundreds of thousands of views. So for me, it was like, I've always wanted to work with Majestic Casual. I remember sending them like dozens of different submissions and they were always like, oh, we pass. Until one day, they liked one of the tracks, they got back to me and they decided to work with me. And once I got there, I was like, I never want to stop working with Majestic Casual.
Incredible. Wow. Well, and especially with them being a dream label. So continue to walk us through the growth. Like once you start having some success, you get a little money from streaming. Like how does that change your perspective on Fallen Roses and what you want to do with your music projects?
Well, I think that for me, the timing was quite weird, if I'm honest with you, because by the time that I got like, you know how labels and distributors have like small delay on payments?
Mm-hmm.
for me, when I released the first track on Majestic Casual, I think I was about to turn 18, I think. I was expelled of high school because like I was like skipping classes.
To make music?
pretty much.
Perfect.
Yeah, but I didn't have bad grades actually. I was actually doing all right or okay. The thing like is in my school, I remember like 3 days before like graduation, I don't know how it's called in English, but I was like the director of the school. Mm-hmm. Or the dean, yeah. I think it's the translation, calls me to her office and it's like, okay, Donovan, we didn't realize something, even though like your grades are okay and like you technically should graduate from high school. We realized that you skip about 40% of your your classes, so you are not allowed to graduate. You are not allowed to graduate from high school. Because we already sent this information to like, I don't know how the institution was called, and we are no longer able to do changes. So even though according to your grades, you should graduate, you don't have enough percentage of assistance in order to graduate.
Wow.
So I was like, oh. And that was like 2 or 3 days before graduation. So I was like, oh, damn. So after that, I basically lied to my parents about graduating while I was like trying to figure out what was happening. And this was like 2 or 3 months after the Majestic Casual release.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically forgot about Fallen Roses by that time. I was like just like thinking on what I will do. Like I was thinking of like, okay, I think I'm too young to get a credit because I wanted to buy a car and try some luck as an Uber driver. Mm-hmm. Or just like thinking an alternative, you know, because I was like, oh, my parents are going to kill me. after that, I eventually told my parents like, okay, I got kicked out of school. So I kind of kept music as a secret for myself because I was making beats since I was like 13, 14, but I didn't tell anyone until I was like 17.
Wow.
So I told them like, yeah, I was skipping classes because I make music. And they were like, you have no music training. What are you talking about? So I had a couple of like rough weeks or months with my parents after I got kicked out of school. And I was like, I need to move out, but I don't have a job. I don't have anything to do. And that's when the label manager of Majestic Casual reaches out. And he's like, oh, here's your royalty statement. And I'm not going to lie, Mexico back then was a very cheap country. Mm-hmm. And when I saw my statement, I was like, okay, I can live with this for like a year.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, my life just completely changed with one email.
Yeah,
so like immediately for me, it was like, I got to make more music. Mm-hmm. And this also allowed me to like move out of my parents' house when I was like 18. And I basically just try to understand the music business, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, okay, where does this money come from? Like, why am I getting paid? Why? Because I was talking with other friends who were making music in Mexico. And when we were comparing like our royalty statements, they were like, oh, but mine are like half of yours.
Mm.
Even though we have like very similar streams. And we were like, oh, so each country pays differently. And I started to get some, I tried to get some like internships on like different labels just to kind of understand how the business works. And that's for me, like, I was like, okay, I want to do this like internships because I can learn a lot from this and this can help like my Fallen Roses project. And I was like doing like both things because for me, I was like, I have a lot of free time back then. I had a lot of free time back then. So I was like making enough music for Fallen Roses. So I wanted to do something like productive on my free time, you know? At least I wanted to either educate myself or to work in my future, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I was like during this like transition between like moving out of my parents and like getting kicked out of school to like making a living of music. I was still trying to understand what was happening back then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, okay, definitely there's something that that I can do with this? Because for me back then it was like a huge opportunity. Like what am I supposed to do now? Yeah. You know, it's like, it's not like I was on the top of the world back then, but for me it felt like that because I didn't even have like $10 on my bank account before that email, you know? So it definitely changed my life back then and how I conceived music. And and it definitely arises a lot of questions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Donovan, that's such an incredible story, man. And I think the timing was absolutely perfect of not being able to graduate. You have no idea what you're about to do with your life. You're contemplating buying a car and driving Uber, and then all of a sudden this email happens and a whole new world of possibilities through music presents itself to you. That's so incredible. And so when you're making electronic music, you're also making beats, but when you started to learn more about the industry and you started thinking to yourself like, oh, okay, well I need to drive revenue and make money off of this. Then when did you start like diving into and releasing like lo-fi beats in comparison to electronic music? Like walk us through what your strategy looked like when you began to understand the industry.
Okay. So for me, first it was like, for me at some point, like monthly listeners were like super important, you know, like I realized that if you had one song to get into lo-fi beats editorial on Spotify, but you released one electronic song and you got on like Dance Brand New or like a New Music Friday or like Dance Covers playlist, you were able to rapidly grow your monthly listeners count, you know, because it's like two different audiences. And that's what I tried to do with Fallen Roses at some point, because Fallen Roses, I think it peaked about like 7 million monthly listeners in like 2021.
Wow.
But the thing is that I think that kind of confuses the industry about what you do, you know? Because when I was trying to reach to like lo-fi labels, they were like, oh, but you make electronic music, you want to make lo-fi now? And when I was reaching out to electronic labels, they were like, oh, but you make lo-fi, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like I wasn't fitting anywhere. So just when I thought that I was finally understanding, like, of course, that's one way to gain monthly listeners. And if your goal is to gain monthly listeners, just for the sake of it, like just release different genres,
mm-hmm.
because that will definitely build your monthly listeners count. But at the same time, it's hard to build a fan base around like all of these constant changes, mm-hmm. you know, because usually if a person decides to follow you, it's because they probably heard one track from you and they liked it. So they are expecting like something similar from you. But if you keep just like changing your sound, it's hard to engage with your audience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that I understood, like just like watching like a lot of my friends grow their projects and was like, okay, why is some people, like, I mean, I was just trying to understand how people consume music, you know? Like what do the average listener do? Why they do it? And for me, that's what changed a lot of things. And that's why I decided to, okay, let me start different projects, because I love making hip hop. I love making lo-fi music, but if you go through my playlist, it's a lot of different styles, mm-hmm. and I want to make every single one of them, you know, mm-hmm. because I'm like, I like this and I like that, but it's hard to find a home for all of those ideas in just one single project.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, okay, I gotta find a way to put out all of these ideas that I'm having or that I'm making. So that's when I decided to, okay, I'm gonna do like one project for each genre, because if right now I wanted to like merge all of my projects in one, I probably have about like three or four million monthly listeners.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of that, I decided to because of course it's impressive when you click on someone's profile and you see like that huge monthly listeners count. I remember at some point, I was talking with an executive of Apple Music, because he was looking for some opportunities for I think Platoon.
Mm.
And he did mention like, even though the monthly listeners account for Fallen Roses, it's impressive, I don't really understand what Fallen Roses stands for right now. Oh. Because like you are putting out a mix of this and that. So for me, that was like, okay, yeah, what I thought was like a good thing for my project, it's now kind of like hurting my project, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why at some point I even thought about like moving the Calabria song to a new profile. But I just decided to leave it there because it's part of the project, you know? Mm-hmm. It was part of it. But moving forward, I decided to stick to a certain sound, you know? Mm-hmm. Or not to a certain sound, but at least to a certain concept. Of like, okay, this is what I want Fallen Roses to represent now. And moving forward, it might be something different, but it will have a cohesive like development, mm-hmm. you know? It's not like, ta-da, today it's Slap House. Yeah. or Deep House or, I don't know, drum and bass. Mm-hmm. So when I started to like work at all of these like different labels, I was just trying, and I'm still trying to understand like how the business works, like the business side of things. And not only the business side of things, but also like what's the process of a person like finding your song to saving it into their libraries or not, mm-hmm. you know? Or why are there some songs like there's many ways on how people discover music. And I think that I just want to be able to one, understand all of them mm-hmm. and two, understand where am I able to fit, mm-hmm. you know? Because that also allows me to I wouldn't say like make music accordingly, but at least try to understand and be realistic about my expectation. But because of course, as artists, we are always expecting our music to do great. Mm-hmm. But also a lot of times like unrealistic expectations can lead to disappointment, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I love everything that you just said, Donovan. And I think it, like the strategy that you had in place to grow Fallen Roses, it worked. It got you the numbers that you needed to gain attention. And then, like you said, now it's time to narrow down the brand, just like that Apple executive suggested. And so moving towards the future, you've kind of figured out the sound that you want for Fallen Roses. Like what is the end goal for Fallen Roses? Like, do you guys want to be touring DJs? Like, what does that look like?
So for Fallen Roses, I really want to be making more like, I want to say like more like artsy music, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. To be honest, we do not have plans of Fallen Roses like doing live sets, at least at the moment. But I want to be able to kind of create more like cinematic or emotional music, like mm-hmm. that kind of music that you just go to when like, I want to say like, that kind of music that you just want to listen to it. It doesn't matter how many years it have passed, you know, like that song that you just come back after like 10 years mm-hmm. or like 15 years because it just reminds you of a certain part of your life or it brings back certain memories, you know? So for Fallen Roses, I just want to be able to establish as one of the of the first, I want to establish Fallen Roses as one of the most important lo-fi projects in Latin America, at least.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And now I think I'm mostly concerned about the quality of the music rather than how well it does. Mm. I want to be able to build an engaged audience with Fallen Roses because you will notice that most of the artists in the lo-fi community or in the lo-fi space, they are able to gain visibility on their music super fast, mm-hmm. you know? While for most of them, it's super hard to actually build an audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want that to happen with Fallen Roses anymore. So my goal for Fallen Roses is to actually build a community surrounding Fallen Roses and also be able to collaborate with singers and kind of like bring the lo-fi sound to mainstream, you know, mm-hmm. because of course there's artists like Billie Eilish or Joji, like kind of like moving in that direction, but they're like, no one knows it's lo-fi and there is no like producer getting the credit for that, yeah. you know? So for Fallen Roses, I kind of want to push in that direction. I think that's what I want to do next.
Wow. That's extremely special, Donovan. So for electronic music, what do you envision your future looking like for being able to create and release electronic music?
When it comes to electronic music, it's different because I do plan to do like DJ sets and play live next year. But the thing is, like, I'm still like having this kind of like internal fight on how often I want to play music, where I want to play music, because at least here in Mexico, if you want to play like DJ sets, people is not willing to hear like what you are trying to propose or what you're trying to do. Like, you just have to play whatever it's on the radio right now, mm-hmm. you know? So for me, even though like I do have like a lot of friends who could help me like get bookings and like do at least like a national tour here in Mexico, I'm not sure if that's what I want to do. I want to do live performances, not because I need to in terms of like financial terms, mm-hmm. but most like I want to, yeah. you know? So I want to put myself in the spaces that I want to be.
Yeah.
Because a lot of artists, touring is one of their main sources of income. Mm-hmm. So they often have to be in like places or situations that they don't want to be, mm-hmm. you know? So I want to make sure that for my electronic project, I'm able to perform, I don't want to say only, but like I want to avoid not being in places I don't want to be.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the goal on the electronic side of the projects, just like be able to perform because I want to and because I enjoy it, even though like I might not be getting as many bookings or as many tours as like other artists, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it's coming from somebody that's so Crystal Grid is my electronic band, and so I play saxophone for that, and it's like a DJ set with saxophone and drums. And we've played a lot of shows in venues that we probably don't want to play at ever again, right? But it was part of the grind. It was part of the journey. And so you certainly have the numbers to be able to pass that stage, right? So I think that's great that you're at a place in your career where you get to decide where you want to play. But I'm getting the sense that, like, creatively, you don't need to play live, but you need to make music.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because to be honest, like, for me, making music, it's like a very important. I don't know. It just sometimes it just doesn't feel like working, mm-hmm. you know? Like, at least while I'm making music, because a lot of times it's like, oh, I have a deadline that I have to submit these tracks or I have to make. But like that process is like, but once I'm like in the process, like once I'm there, it's just like, it just flows smoothly, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like just doing my thing. And for me, it's like super fun. And that's actually another thing that I want to do, because I started making music like in my studio, like alone. And I wasn't, like I still don't feel 100% comfortable in like sharing studios with other people, but I think that that's something I want to do more often, because I started to slowly enjoy the process of making music with other people in just like a room full of creative artists, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I definitely want to do more in the future, just like collaborate with other artists.
Yeah. Well, and that's beautiful, Donovan. Man, you've had, the rise of your projects, man, and like how quickly you've been able to grow your fan base is absolutely incredible. And as somebody who has watched the landscape change in regards to streaming, like what are some of the biggest differences now? And I guess I'll preface by, you know, even 2 years ago, like you could have a lot of success with independent releases potentially as an up and coming artist. But now with the changes to Spotify editorial placements has become more difficult, and working with a label seems more advantageous. So how has that strategy kind of shifted for you?
So I think it just, I think it, it indeed it's like very different, because Spotify definitely changed the way on how they curate the editorials. But I think this has a lot to do on the way that people discover music. Because I think that platforms like TikTok or like Instagram Reels, 2 years ago, they were not as relevant as they are today. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Spotify realized this, and that's why they are trying to shift the way on how they curate music. Mm. So I think they are trying to do like a more like based on whatever it's trending or like based on data versus just like having curators like just like, oh, this is dope, this is deserves recognition, you know? Of course, for the independent artist, this means that it's harder to get placements. But even if you get a placement on editorials today, it's not what it used to be 2 years or 3 or 4 years ago. Like the streams you get now from Lo-Fi Beats or one of these Lo-Fi editorials are quite small in comparison to what they used to be. Mm-hmm. Because nowadays, like, you get a placement on Lo-Fi Beats, like, the most you can expect from Lo-Fi Beats is, like, 1 million streams. Mm-hmm. But before, like, 2017, 2018, like, there's people that make, like, 20, 30, 40, 50 million streams of that playlist, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's because back then that was the only playlist that... Oh, sorry. Because that was the only playlist or the main playlist on Spotify. Mm-hmm. But now there's a lot more competition, like... back then it was like that. I think what happened is that there's more offer and the demand, it's pretty much the same, you know? Mm-hmm. So now instead of sharing that audience with 100,000 artists, now you have to share that audience with millions.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Even though the numbers might not be accurate, it's kind of the idea, you know? Mm-hmm. Because now you have independent curators like Lo-Fi Girl or Sleep Tales. And a lot of the times, the audience that Lo-Fi Girl has is the same audience that Spotify had years ago, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's that just like, you just have to share with most people. And you have to be creative. Because if this is not working, that this is why I also want to build a community and to build a fan base. Mm-hmm. Because if you're able to build a fan base, you no longer need to rely on editorials.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's easier to land editorials.
Mm-hmm.
Because for DSPs, of course, they will prefer to support like an established artist, you know, and someone who is going to actively directing people to their platforms.
Yeah.
Versus an artist who is not able to do that. And I know that in lo-fi, it's hard to do. But I think there's a couple of artists, I don't know, like Cooking Soul, you know? Mm-hmm. Cooking Soul is a beatmaker from Spain who has like over 200,000 followers on Instagram or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's been able to build a community.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of time he gets support on his music, but I don't think he relies on that, mm-hmm. you know? Like he's able to also like sell sample packs and do a lot of other stuff on the side. So I think that regarding to... The recent changes on how Spotify and other platforms curate their playlist, I think it's just forcing artists to shift or change their strategy, mm-hmm. you know? Before it was just like, okay, I'm just going to release through this label or this distributor and just going to get placements. And now you have to put in additional work.
Yeah.
Because now you don't only have to make like really good beats, like you are now also need to promote them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the main change. And I think that for lo-fi artists, it's something new. But I think that's how it's been for other artists, in at least in other spaces, you know?
Yeah.
When I talk to my friends who make pop or like Latin music or like EDM, it's like, yeah, it's always been like that for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I guess that for us in the lo-fi space, it's different because in lo-fi, it didn't used to matter how many followers or where you came from. Like, I think it was like pretty, it was mainly about the music, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now I think like there's more factors that decide who gets played listed and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's crazy how quickly it changes just year from year of... of releasing with a label like Lo-Fi Girl in comparison to independent. And of course, I've gone along with those changes as well with my lo-fi projects. And so Donovan, I want to get your thoughts on what the lo-fi scene looks like in like 1 to 2 to 3 years. Of course, with the, you just mentioned lo-fi artists building communities and building a larger brand around their project. What else do you think is going to happen to the lo-fi scene?
I think that this already started to happen, but I think that a lot of artists are just stopping to make lo-fi because they just are like, okay, yeah, I will not be able to make a living of lo-fi, so I need to start producing other genres. Mm-hmm. But I think that eventually you might find a similar issue. And this is why I decided to just like make different types of music, because if eventually like lo-fi isn't like there's no way, which is like it's usually always a way.
Yeah.
But if there's like no way to make a living of lo-fi, I can just, okay, I have another project who that should be able to sustain Fallen Roses while lo-fi is what it used to be before, at least while I'm able to make a living with lo-fi again, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that in 1 or 2 years, either there's less competition, or like I said before, like producers started to build communities around their music.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's just, I think it's going to mainly change the way on how people discover their music, plus the way that artists promote their music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's going to be the main change within the community. And I think that there's going to be a lot of producers who used to do lo-fi that just stopped doing lo-fi because they didn't want to do content, or they didn't want to. Or maybe they just got tired, because I've also heard it from a lot of like established producers that are like, to be honest, I don't really enjoy making lo-fi anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just like tired of lo-fi. Like it's just so easy for me to make beats.
Yeah.
And maybe this is like the perfect opportunity for them to just like move on to other genres.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me, I will always enjoy making beats, you know?
Yep.
So even if like it doesn't matter if it's easy or it's hard, like it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm honest, it's just fun. And it's also like a very like, I don't know, it's like a very personal way of like expressing yourself, because it's like mainly, it's hard to conceive, while in other genres, it's hard to conceive like the instrumental version. In lo-fi, it's the opposite. It's a lot of people have a hard time understanding like how lo-fi pop will sound like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I think there's a lot more like instrumental lo-fi songs versus like lo-fi songs with top lines.
Totally. But like you said, man, I think the top lines are going to continue to integrate themselves in our community from innovative artists like yourself, like people that really want to push that boundary and see if they can make that infusion.
Yeah, to be honest, that's what I'm trying to do. And when it comes to labels, that's what I decided to move forward, because Fallen Roses, I worked with Majestic Casual for like 3 years. Then I signed an exclusive deal with Fruits Music,
mm-hmm,
for like two years and a half, something like that. So I had to deliver like X amount of tracks in like 2 or 3 years. Then I did one album with the Alt Vision. And during that stage, I was just like trying to figure out what to do next, mm-hmm, because I was getting like, back then, Fallen Roses had like 5 or 6 million monthly listeners. So I was getting a lot of like good offers, like in financial terms. But a lot of these these big offers mainly came from either labels or distributors that just wanted to try lo-fi,
mm,
or wanted to, I don't know, there's a lot of like major companies that just have a lot of money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people that has worked with them, and I never really saw them like doing something for their career, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so for me, I was just like, I need to find a partner that kind of like aligns with my vision of like I want to, of what I want to do. And that's when Network Music Group reached out to me. I was having a conversation with my friend Harmless. Shout out to Nacho. And he was telling me that he was signing, or that he signed this deal with Network Music Group, and that they might be interested into doing lo-fi. So he introduced me to his A&R, and we were just talking. And when we were talking about like the lo-fi space and what they wanted to do, it was like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do. And with Network working with such a large roster of like independent artists, it just like facilitates the... It just facilitates collaborations, you know? It just makes sense because they have like a large catalog that you can sample.
Dude, I did not even think about that in regards to one of your biggest interests in Network is just their roster of top liners.
Yeah, exactly. Because it just facilitates collaborations, and you are also able to, instead of just like sending cold emails to them, it's just like your A&R can make like a friendly connection between you and them. And you can not only make that connection, but you can genuinely like make friends, you know, and just like start growing in different spaces. Because I think a lot of times like beat makers are used to, I only collaborate with other lo-fi beat makers, you know, but at least for me, I want to like, of course, yeah, I can collaborate with other beat makers I admire, but I also want to work with people that don't necessarily have to deal with the lo-fi community, you know? Because I think that collaboration, it's key when it comes to success or like building a community or an audience, you know? And usually it's easier to build a community when you're like a top liner or a singer or a songwriter or a band. So I want to be able to work with them in any possible way, either doing official remixes for them or either doing collaborations for my projects or for their projects. I guess that I just want to be part of something great.
Wow.
You know?
That's Donovan. Well, that's incredible. And I've had a few other artists on that have signed with Network, and they've loved their experience so far. And so there's clearly the benefit from the collaboration perspective. What does releasing lo-fi beats through Network look like in regards to like what kind of playlists do they have set up, or playlist connections or editorial connections? Like what does releasing just beats with Network look like?
So I think that's the thing with Network. Like I've heard some artists that work with Network, and I think the only way on how they conceive music promotion, it's through editorials. And I'm not going to lie, it's like a significant way on how you can promote your music. But I think that the way Network approaches music is like building a catalog, you know, that you can live off. And that's one thing that I like. For example, right now they have this song, like Network has this song called Duvet by Boa. It's like an indie rock song. I think they released that song in like the 90s, like, or the, I don't know, more than 20 years ago for sure. And the song just started to go viral on TikTok like this year, like a couple of weeks ago, you know? And I think that's like, I think that Network just believes in like good music. And I think that I was actually talking with a couple of friends about this a couple of weeks ago. A lot of people, it's like getting obsessed with like success in like the most like immediate way. But usually that kind of success doesn't last, you know? Because you also have to, you gotta have a plan once that happens. And I think that Network has the perfect structure to understand what they need to do once you get there, you know? Because, for example, when Fallen Roses got to like 7 million monthly listeners, I didn't have the structure to do or to even take advantage of my positions back then. I was just like, oh, okay, this is happening too fast, you know? So for me, working with Network besides collaborations is just... I know that they have a very large team of people, of hardworking people that when my music is going to go viral, I hope it does, they will know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, of course I can bring in some ideas, but I think that they've worked with such big catalogs that they have the experience. Because a lot of like the lo-fi labels, they know, like they've had success to a certain point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because for example, labels like Lo-Fi Girl, they have such a large catalog of like songs that do well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really have hits.
Yeah.
There's no like one song that has like a billion streams on Lo-Fi Girl.
Yeah.
Or like half a billion or like a couple hundred of millions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I'm not sure, yeah. But I feel like if that ever happens, they might not know what to do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons on why I wanted to work with Network, because they also like to invest in artists and they also give you creative freedom, while in a lot of other labels, like you just have to kind of like make the sound that they are looking for,
mm-hmm.
because they have built a brand and a reputation for, because they also understand how people discover music, you know? Like, let's say Lo-Fi Girl. If Lo-Fi, like, a lot of artists just complain about how they have to stick to a certain sound when they work with them. But I also understand it, because imagine you are a listener, right? And you want to study and you don't want to get distracted. Like, if there's like constant changes on the yeah. music direction, like, it's also it's also harder for them to promote the music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they can only like take risk to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
Like they cannot change the sound that they are known for unless they keep starting new brands,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But I think they only have two brands, like the Signed Wave,
mm-hmm.
New brand that they started. But I also understand that, but I think that it's just different approaches, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to say like, this is the correct way to do it or that's wrong. I just think that it's different approaches to music marketing in general.
Yeah.
And at least where I'm at, labels like Network, it just made sense for me, because I don't think that, it all depends on what you want to do with your music and what you are willing and what you are not willing to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's, for example, I'm trying to do social media content. I'm starting to shoot social media content. And for me, Network has an ad manager, a social media manager, who's going to be able to help you create strategies and run ads on your posts, so you are able to get there faster, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that I see a lot of value in, but for some artists that they don't want to show their faces, or they just don't want to do content at all.
Mm-hmm.
I get that they might not see value in that, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that it's just different for each artist, and it just depends what they want to do, what they are willing to do, and what they are not willing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like an incredible opportunity for you to be able to team up with Network, especially at this phase in your career. It sounds like the perfect fit. And, Donovan, so how do you manage everything that you're doing? Like, how do you wake up every day and manage all of the things that you have going on?
To be honest, it's mainly a mix of Notion and Google Calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I discovered Notion like 2 years ago. But for me, Notion, it's just like a perfect way to like organize all of my projects. So for me, like, here's my phone. Like,
yep.
I just have a lot of like different projects.
Yep.
And these are like the main, like some of the main projects I have.
Wow. Yeah.
But for me, it's just like, I just go through them. And I also have like a daily to-do list. Like, I have to check my emails every morning. And I kind of just build my own routine, you mm-hmm. know, where I just like, there are certain things that I have to do once a week. There are certain things that I have to do twice per week. There are certain things that I have to do daily. And that's when Google Calendar helps, because I'm able to just like track all of my meetings, that I have to do. And it's just like, because I think that being organized definitely helps
mm-hmm.
in your productivity. And I always trying to like keep my studio clean and keep my apartment clean, because I think that it definitely helps in productivity, yeah. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it also makes things like much more enjoyable
yeah.
because you know what you have to do. I usually try to lock my schedule for the next day or the next couple of days ahead. So I don't have to do like, oh, what did I have to do? I just like, okay, I know exactly what I have to do next. I need to work into this track, I have 1 hour. And I am able to dedicate this track 2 more sessions. So I just like, I will work today, 1 hour on the track, and then I finish it on Wednesday, and that's it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. And you sound super organized, which is funny because, in similar to you, man, my routine and schedule is locked in, but there's a lot of artists that do not have that same level of organization.
Yeah, and I think it's because, like, I think there's just, like, different approaches. I don't think this is the right way to do it. At least it is for me. It works for me. But it's because my goals are different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For some artists, that's not the goal. Like, for some artists, it's just like, I just want to have fun. Yeah. Routines are not necessarily fun, you know? But it all depends on what you are trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Donovan, this was an incredible conversation, man. And thank you for being willing to share your story and being willing to share your industry insight, man. And it was a true pleasure to talk to you, dude. I'm excited to have you back on in a few months and see how everything is going, man, because you're on top of it. You're on top and you're going places.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course, man. This will, yeah, we'll get you back on again soon. Certainly. And everybody tuning in, as always, thank you for listening. Much love. Peace.
Bye.